Genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brains.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Oh, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turn now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're on every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on KKZZ AM 1400, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura County. You can also listen to us streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura County. If all of this sounds like National Public Radio, well, then you're getting the idea. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is NPR done right. If you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008, 639-0008, or area code 805-639-0008 if you're outside of the county. You'll want to keep that telephone number handy because we have two giveaways today in this hour, one each for a sandwich at Urbane Cafe at their new location in Oxnard, the corner of Gonzales and Rose Avenue. So keep that number at hand. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is changing perceptions. That's right. If you looked outside last night, you noticed it was a full moon. That was a harvest moon, indicating the change between the summer and the fall seasons. And each of my three guests, we're going to be talking about changing your perceptions on a particular subject. My first guest, we're going to be changing your perception about one of America's least known yet least understood individual characters. Secondly, we'll be talking to somebody who will change your perception about a community organization here in Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. And finally, our third guest will be talking about changing your own perception as well. My first guest was born in China. Huanti Yang arrived in Alabama in 1991. He received his PhD from SUNY, that's the State University of New York at Buffalo. He's now an American citizen, and he's taught at Harvard University. Currently, he's a professor of English at the University of California, Santa Barbara, UCSB, right up the road. His latest book, Charlie Chan, The Untold Story of the Honorable Detective and His Rendezvous with American History, follows a trail of clues that leads to Honolulu and then deeply impressive career of Chang Apana, the Chinese-born detective on whom the character Charlie Chan was based. Welcome to the show. How are you today?
Thank you. I'm good.
Well, glad to have you here. Now, this is a fascinating subject. And right off the bat, you're nationally born in China, so you're Chinese by birth. Charlie Chan has always been something of a stereotype, at least here in the United States, sort of a part of the era of the all-white American values. What prompted you to write about the subject of Charlie Chan?
Well, let's say he's a Chinese mystery, or like a Chinese box. He has layers and layers of meanings. And I first came upon Charlie Chan in 1994 when I was a graduate student in Buffalo. And one day I was in an estate sale in Buffalo, and I found these two Charlie Chan books. And so I took them home, and I was immediately hooked because I found this, you know, Chinese character to be so funny, you know, his sayings, Confucius say, all these, you know, fortune cookie aphorisms sound, you know, strangely familiar and yet so exotic. And so I was hooked. And so I spent about a decade, you know, doing research on this character, trying to find out everything about him. And through him, I discovered, you know, the real Charlie Chan, Chan Apana. Rough and tumble Hawaiian cowboy.
Well, he is a fascinating character, but before we leave this whole subject of stereotypes, a lot of people in the Chinese community have sort of really looked at Charlie Chan and look at him as sort of the Uncle Tom, if you will, of the Chinese community. I mean, to our way of thinking, that was just Orientalism brought into the United States. What do you have to say to that?
Well, in the book, I trace the whole history of kind of Charlie Chan history, you know, the whole history of his making and his reception and the up and downs in his Charlie Chan's career. Just to give you a summary, you know, he was you know, created at this, you know, critical turn of American culture, 1925. The year before then, the U.S. just passed the, you know, Johnson-Reed Act, Immigration Act, targeting mostly, you know, the Irish, Southern Europeans and Eastern Europeans and all Asians. So it was a critical time in American culture when the nation really closed its door to the so-called foreigners. And this lovely Chinaman stumbled on stage, questions why. There are a number of reasons, I think. One obvious reason is that, you know, despite the, you know, the kind of xenophobia characteristic of that, you know, 1920s, that era, you know, Orientalism, like you say, you know, was always in the air, and America always had a long kind of lasting love, a craze, you know, for Asia. You know, just think about, you know, Ernest Fenollosa, you know, Lafcadio Hearn, all these so-called Boston Brahmins who went to Japan and China and brought back, you know, literature, music, you know, tea and artifacts, etc., etc. So Charlie Chan was really born in this kind of, I should say, in a period when the love for the other and also the hatred of the other, you know, were tied together like Siamese twins. And so he was really charming at the time, but then he suffers what I would call like an tarnishing of his image in the post-World War II era, was that, you know, in the Cold War, in a kind of poison air of Cold War propaganda and especially anti-Chinese paranoia, all things Chinese took on a kind of negative, insidious connotation, including Charlie Chan. You just think about, and California is a great place to think about this, you know, film noir, you know, if you think about Raymond Chandler, you know, somehow you always in the eerie and dark background, you can find a character who so-called has Charlie Chan mustache and with dubious Chinese names will hover in the background. And I mean, in Chinatown, for instance, you know, Roman Polanski's Chinatown, you know, if you remember the punchline at the end of the movie was that, you know, forget it, Jake, it's Chinatown. And so for Asian Americans growing up in that era, Charlie Chan was, I should say, a very painful memory because, you know, he was, you know, I think kind of misused or misinterpreted in that period as this kind of insidious Chinaman, which is quite unfortunate.
We're talking to Yuntai Wang, everybody. Am I pronouncing your name correctly?
Yuntai, yes.
Yuntai,
yes.
Okay. And we're talking about Charlie Chan and his growth both in fiction and in the films as well. The reason that I brought you in today, the reason that this whole subject fascinates me, isn't about the character necessarily Charlie Chan. It's about the fact that this was based on a real man. Right. And this was a real detective in Honolulu. So tell us the story about Chang Apana, please.
Right. Well, Chang Apana, shall we say, you know, in the 19th century, there was this kind of anti-Chinese logo, lingo, so-called, you know, no Chinaman's chance. And Apana literally was a guy who was illiterate, son of a coolie laborer, who otherwise would have stood no Chinaman's chance and somehow ended up, you know, making a name for himself and became the inspiration for Charlie Chan. But to summarize his biography, he was born in Hawaii around, you know, 1871. Like I said, son of a coolie laborer who came to Hawaii to work on sugarcane plantations. At the age of three, he went to China with his parents and grew up there until he was 10. Interestingly, he actually grew up in the same district as Sun Yat-sen,
really?
Who also came of age in Hawaii later on in Honolulu. You know, Sun Yat-sen was converted to Christianity and learned about Western democracy, this founding father of Republic of China. They actually kind of overlapped a little in Chinatown in Hawaii. Think about that.
Fascinating.
You know, anyway, so Apana came back to Hawaii at the age of 10, and then he became a pañolo, that's Hawaiian for cowboy, and he worked at ranches. And then in 1898, just when Hawaii was annexed by the United States, he joined the police force. As an officer, he would walk the most dangerous beats in Chinatown carrying a bullwhip, you know, that he made himself. He didn't need a gun. He actually was the only officer in that department who was allowed to carry a bullwhip in place of a gun, and because he was so good at it. And the criminals in Honolulu were mostly afraid of the whip, really. And he was stabbed many times, shot, you know, twice, you know, run over by a horse and buggy, and then flew out of a second floor window, you know, once. And so he really made a name for himself. You know,
well,
this is a tough guy.
Absolutely a tough character, carrying around a bullwhip. It does bring up that whole cowboy image that you're talking about. Now, the other thing that I found interesting about it, From the sounds of that description, you think he's a burly John Wayne type of guy, strapping, brawny guy. In reality, he wasn't. He was less than an imposing figure, wasn't he?
No, yeah, yes. He's short, you know, 5 feet tall, really skinny. And although he talks pretty fast, he speaks Hawaiian and Cantonese. He doesn't read or write Chinese. So he, you can think about this, like, as a detective, he will be more like, less like Charlie Cheung, but more like, you know, Humphrey Bogart, this kind of tough guy, you know. Tough.
Okay.
But he is tough.
He is absolutely tough.
But not as, you know, say, talkative as Charlie Cheung. You know, Charlie Cheung to me, and that's, you know, I think the misunderstanding of Charlie Cheung, oftentimes he's considered, you know, to be like inscrutable. And I really think Americans misunderstood, you know, Asian humor. And Charlie Cheung is a great example of, you know, Asian humor in disguise. Because he can get you. Well, if you give an example, one time, you know, he was handling a case. This, I think, was in Black Hamel. A white British man, a suspect, was complaining of being handled by a Chinaman. So, and he said, like, why can't they send a white detective here? Why am I being handled by a Chinaman? And Charlie Cheung said, a man who is about to cross a stream should not revile the crocodile's mother. And the man said, what do you mean by that? You know, he can get you. You know, his sayings, you know, he's a trickster figure. You know, his aphorisms may not be as nasty as, say, you know, sayings like, your mama is so fat when she steps on a scale, you know, it says to be continued. You know, he's never that nasty, but he can get you, you know, if you're not careful or if you're a racist, you know, he can get you.
That's great. We're talking to Wante Chang, everybody. Wante Wong, excuse me. And his book is called Charlie Chan, The Untold Story of the Honorable Detective and His Rendezvous with American History. We're going to take a short break, but when we come back, I want to get into more of how this real-life character turned into the fictionalized character that we now know as Charlie Chan. Don't answer that now. Answer it when we get back after this short break.
And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
You know, I think your brain produces a chemical that blocks out my voice.
What? Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hey, and welcome back, everybody. This is Bill Frank. You're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ AM 1400, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura County. And today's theme is changing perceptions. My first guest, Wante Hong, is talking about Charlie Chan, The Untold Story of the Honorable Detective and His Rendezvous with American History. This is a fascinating story about the real-life man behind the fictionalized character of Charlie Chan. And before we went away to commercial, we were talking about how did this diminutive 5-foot-tall person carrying around a bullwhip in the streets of Chinatown in Honolulu become the fictionalized character of Charlie Chan in the books and in the movies?
Well, it has to do, of course, with the career of Earl Dare Biggers, who discovered Changapana, really stumbled upon the name and the story of Changapana on the beach of Waikiki. And Earl Dare Biggers is another kind of, you know, piece of Americana. He was, you know, born in a small town in Ohio, this young Buckeye who had no family connection and yet made it into Harvard and became a best-selling, you know, writer. After Harvard, he first started out as a nighttime, you know, police reporter for Cleveland Plain Dealer, and he was soon fired because he was better at storytelling than, you know, journalism. So anyway, and then he started writing mystery novels, and he was overworked, so he had to take a vacation in Hawaii, and that's where he stumbled upon Changapana, and then he thought, wow, wouldn't be a great idea to write a story, you know, a novel based in Waikiki, and then have this kind of weird, you know, kind of, a Chinese detective in the story. And that's how it started out. Really, yeah.
Now, you just briefly passed over it. You say he ran into Changapana. Did he literally, at that point, run into him and meet the man, or did he encounter the stories of Changapana?
No, he didn't get to meet Changapana until 1928, after he had already published 2 Charlie Cheung novels, already became well-known as the Charlie Cheung author. And his eventual meeting with Changapana is another kind of, you know, a piece of, you know, a curiosity, really, I write about in the book, that he met up almost the second day he arrived in Hawaii, you know, July. He arrived on the Day of Independence, July 4th in Hawaii. The next day, he met up with Changapana, you know, and they took pictures. strangely enough, you know, the photograph was that was distributed later on, supposing, you know, supposedly a picture of, you know, the author Charlie Chang meeting the real Charlie Chang was actually a picture of Elder Biggers and a stand-in Charlie Chang. The guy actually was a bellhop from, you know, a Royal Hawaiian Hotel, a Chinese boy who kind of looked more like Charlie Chang, I guess, you know, in character. But in my book also has this, you know, the real picture of Chang Apana and Earl Debra Biggers. And Apana obviously, you know, has that kind of, a cold, you know, piercing look, you know, into the eye of Earl Debra Biggers. Perhaps that doesn't look like Charlie Chang enough. And that's one thing we have to talk about, is about race and culture in America in the 1920s and the 30s, about Hollywood, et cetera, you know, all these topics that have been covered in my book.
Well, it is very fascinating, and let's get into it right now, because I think that your Charlie Chan's figure actually helped sort of salve the consciousness of the United States. Because as you said, we're coming into a very xenophobic time. We didn't want a lot of foreigners coming into the country. At the same time, here in California and I guess in Hawaii as well, there were a lot of Chinese here already, and there were cultural stereotypes already built up about it. To me, being a little bit closer to the West Coast, it seemed to me the Charlie Chan movies were sort of helping to integrate the two cultures, the Chinese culture and the American culture, in a way that we, the Americans at the time, could accept it. Is that a fair assessment?
Well, it's hard to say, although, you know, I'm looking at this as kind of unique artistic form of America. You know, I call this, you know, yellow face, or racial ventriloquism. You can think about blackface, you know, red face, Jew face. The fact that Warner Olin, who, you know, was the best actor of Charlie Chang, he made a name for himself for doing, you know, Jew face, for that matter, right? He played the Jewish father in the first talkie, you know, Al Jolson's, you know, the jazz singer. So he was very good at it. And this is really the most, I think, vibrant part of American culture, is this kind of crossbreeding that, you know, we're doing each other in many ways. There is, of course, there's a lot of racism in this. That's why I said Charlie Chang is really, you know, the embodiment of both the racist legacy, but also the creative genius of this country. You know, we have to, we don't need to, we can't celebrate the racism part, but we have to acknowledge that, you know, this is really something that uniquely defines America, you know, as insulting and sobering as it is.
Hmm. Very interesting. Well, I want to come back to a conversation we started earlier before the break, and that is, what led you to be so fascinated about Charlie Chan? Now, you've stumbled across the books in a bookstore in Buffalo, New York, and that's great. A lot of people get fascinated, pick up a book, read it, and it makes an impression on their lives, but not necessarily a big enough impression where you're going to devote a year to research and then more time to writing the book. So why did you go from just reading the books to actually writing on the subject?
Okay. Well, given what I just said about this kind of, you know, the embodiment of both legacies of America, Charlie Chang, therefore, to me, you know, holds the key to American culture. As a real Chinaman coming from China, you know, I look at American culture sometimes through the eye of Charlie Chang, especially through his experience. You know, essentially, Charlie Chang, to me, is a kind of a resume of Chinese in America, you know, and how they first came and how, you know, how they developed their career, et cetera, and the racism against them, et cetera. So as I told you early on, you know, when we were off the air, you know, I first came to the United States, and in 1991 I landed in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and I, you know, spent 3 years living there, and that's quite an experience that I, therefore, I've always tried to write about that experience. I've been working on this memoir called Yellow Alabama. It was in the process of writing this memoir, you know, at my condo in Mesa, you know, Santa Barbara, literally. And one day I thought, well, you know, I may have to write about Charlie Chang first, because he really holds the key for me, you know. In order to fully understand my own American experience, I may have to think through, you know, this with Charlie Chang, this iconic Chinaman first.
All right. Well, help set the stage for us, Yente. In the early 20th century in the United States, and in particular, let's talk about Hawaii. What was the mood? What was going on in Americans' minds, particularly towards Chinese in this country?
Well, you know, there's ups and downs. You know, Chinaman, for instance, give an example. You know, started out as a neutral term. You know, Emerson quoted, you know, use Chinaman not as a negative term, really, but only after anti-Chinese sentiments gain currency in California, first, really. You know, gold mines, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Chinaman took on negative, you know, connotation. And interestingly, like hoodlum, the English word hoodlum, is actually, you know, came out of San Francisco street. It actually means huddle them. It's anti-Chinese, meaning, you know, it's a cry for mob to huddle Chinese together and harass them. So hoodlum is actually anti-Chinese, kind of, you know, etymologically. Has to do with California and anti-Chinese, you know, mobs. But anyway, that led to 1882, you know, Chinese Immigration Act. And that was really the first, you know, immigration bill targeting a specific ethnic group. You know, 1924 Johnson Reed Act was targeting a lot of groups, but you know, the 1882 Act was targeting only Chinese only, and the first time in American history, really. And as a result of that, you know, Chinese had stopped coming. And by the time of 1920s, the main target, Asian target, was Japanese because of the rise of Japan,
rise of the empire, the threat of war,
etc. So there's a reason that Charlie Chang, you know, as a Chinese, would become a beloved character in the 1920s because he was not Japanese. And if you watch the movies carefully or read the novels carefully, you will see Charlie Chang actually wears, you know, he has the mark of his time that he actually is sort of anti-Japanese. He will, you know, wisecracking against Chinese.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, Hawaii is an interesting melting pot of cultures,
sure,
anyway, because
yes,
it's the gateway to from the United States to Asia and vice versa. So what was it like for the Chinese living and working in Hawaii at that time in the early 1900s?
Well, to a great extent, you know, racism was replicated. You know, whatever is going on mainland will be replicated in, you know, in Hawaii.
I would have thought they'd be more tolerant.
Yes, they actually are. That's what I was going to say. They are more tolerant, and that's the reason that Changapana will become a local legend as a Chinese. You know, he was not just the first undercover cop in Honolulu. He was also the first, you know, humane officer on the streets of Honolulu. So he did a lot of, you know, first things. And so under the, you know, before Hawaii was annexed, you are right that Hawaii was a lot more tolerant, you know, of Asian population, including Chinese.
Oh, great. We're talking to Yontoy Hong, everybody, whose book, Charlie Chan, The Untold Story of the Honorable Detective and His Rendezvous with American History. It's a fascinating read, a biography of the actual character behind the Charlie Chan figure, which is Changapana. Now, you're going up to Santa Barbara. You're a professor at UCSB. You're on your way to Santa Barbara for an event tonight. What is that event?
It's a book talk and then book signing at Chaucer's bookstore. At 7 o'clock.
Tonight. Chaucer's at 7 o'clock. If you're going to be in the Santa Barbara area, you're looking for something to do, Chaucer's is at the corner of State Street and Las Positas. You can go in, get a little bit of lecture, learn a little bit more on this subject as well. Now, we've talked a little bit about your perception of it. Now, the transition of Charlie Chan from the books, which were very popular in the 20s, yes, to the movies, how did that take place? And I love the fact that the lead character for Charlie Chan was a Swede. Right. I mean, that's just part of the anti-Oriental mentality that we had going on in this country.
Right.
So tell us about that transition.
Well, you know, that transition had to do with the rise of Hollywood. You know, Hollywood had just begun, really, to grab the lion's share of American popular imagination. And Hollywood almost immediately jumped on the Charlie Chan bandwagon from the beginning. Although the first three actors, you know, of Charlie Chan in the silent film era were actually not white. They were Asian. There were two Japanese and one Korean. But, you know, maybe because of the lack of talent, or maybe mostly because of racism in Hollywood, they just simply did not have enough star power, let's say, to make Charlie Chan a success. Not until Warner Olin, this great Swedish actor, came along and played the Chinese sleuth, that Chang's, you know, Hollywood career finally took off. And he became even more popular in China.
He became more popular in China?
In China, yes. You know, when the movies were being played in Chinese theaters in the 1930s, you know, every day it was sold out. And Warner Olin went to visit China in 1936. When he got there, he was mobbed by the fans and journalists, and the cottage industry of Chinese cinema at the time started making its own homegrown Charlie Chan films. Think about that.
Wow.
You know, you are talking about real Chinaman imitating a Swede's imitation of a Chinaman, really. You know?
There's a great irony in that, isn't there? We're talking, everybody, to Yun Tae Hong, everybody. He is the author of the book Charlie Chan, The Untold Story of the Honorable Detective and His Rendezvous with American History. I can't believe how quickly the time goes. It just flies by. There's more to this subject, and if you're interested in more on this subject, you can listen to the talk that's being given tonight at Chaucer's Bookstore in Santa Barbara, the intersection of State Streets and Las Positas. You'll be there at 7 o'clock talking about this subject and also signing books, I imagine, as well.
And including Charlie Chan fortune cookies.
And including Charlie Chan fortune cookies. So there you go, carrying on with the whole Charlie Chan tradition. Thank you.
Thank you
so much, Yun Tae, for coming in. I appreciate it.